Hi guys, it's Nick. Thank you for being a listener. Over the past year, Jay and I have been doing these live consultations, and it's been fascinating to see the similarities and unique challenges that we all face as entrepreneurs. Over the past 6 months, we've had hundreds of conversations with business leaders, and we've noticed two key patterns. First, you are not yet even scratching the surface of how much you can leverage AI and automation to optimize your key systems and processes. I'm seeing that you can almost immediately double your team's productivity when using just a handful of new technologies in the right way. Second, you have immense untapped revenue potential when you look at your business model and distribution channels from a new lens. If you've been listening to this podcast, then you have an idea of the type of breakthroughs that we uncover in just a short period of time. If you'd like to get help with your business and spend time in person with Jay and I, we both have upcoming in-person workshops where we can spend time together to help you grow your business. And in this two-day workshop, we will roll up our sleeves and focus on optimizing your key processes and leveraging cutting-edge AI tools and automation to enhance your efficiency. We have a few remaining in our intimate group of 20, and we wanted to extend a personal invitation to our listeners. In these 2 days, you'll 1. Optimize your number one process and leverage AI and automation. 2. Experience special AI presentations on the latest tools and techniques. 3. Network with other high-level entrepreneurs and have fun. We're carefully selecting a group of business leaders who have a business process they'd like to optimize or questions about their current tech stack. The dates are September 26th and 27th in Los Angeles. Day 1 will be focused on efficiency problem solving. Day 2 will be all about implementation. To qualify, you must be 1. An entrepreneur or business leader with annual revenue greater than $5 million. 2. Have a process that has cost over $100,000 a year in labor or opportunity costs. 3. Appreciative of great food and engaging conversations. If this sounds interesting to you, please email nick@getleverage.com and we'll send over more details. Enjoy today's episode and please subscribe if you haven't already. P.S. What did you think of my AI voice clone? This is just one example of how you can leverage AI to save time.
We've done everything north of $5 million, and we have consultants that have consulted on over $100 million worth of losses. We did an occupied prison. Two sections were burned down, so we did a restoration for all that. And then, you know, hey, we've got a hotel, or hey, we've got a multifamily that burned or whatever, so we would come in and do those.
If you have to take a plane, go to a site, with AI nowadays, like, shouldn't someone just be able to go and take a videotape, and then it just automatically analyzes it and tells you what the cost is?
It's a great idea.
I mean, what would happen if you sent a bid anyhow and say, look, just in case you aren't happy or somebody else doesn't match it, are you going to be blackballed? I mean, you may be, but I mean, I would try to do a lot of proactive things that focused on the gaps that you've uncovered.
I appreciate that. Those are good suggestions.
I always like to know how somebody got into it, Matt, and then how you drive it or how you have driven it, because some people, you know, they do a Herculean job to get to critical mass, and then they sort of let it, you know, come from referrals. Other people have massive sales. I mean, obviously, there's all kinds of different sources of lead. Why don't you just give us a little background on that?
So, own Pro Commercial. I've done commercial construction now for 20 plus years. And we were doing a lot of public work, meaning for schools, military, Department of Transportation, stuff like that, kind of post 08. And we're also doing a lot of senior care restoration or ground up additions. And then what that did is it led into, hey, we've got a large loss. A lot of people want to come in and do the mitigation, which is just ultimately the emergency work because there's a large margin in there. And we actually like doing the restorative work or the reconstruction because the margin, that's what we do. And then the margins are better than if we're working on a school and we have to be the lowest bid in order to get it. So we started doing projects. Like, we did an occupied prison that was burned. Two sections were burned down. So we did a restoration for all that. And then, you know, hey, we've got a hotel, or hey, we've got a multifamily that, you know, burned or whatever. So we would come in and do those. And then we started just really focusing on it. And we hired a guy that had been a part of it for the last 20 years to run that side. And so for the last 2 years, he's been running the consulting side and then really converting the consultant jobs into the actual construction where we make most of our money. So it's nice because in the regular construction, you're always bidding, 10 jobs to get two. And in this case, you're consulting, but you're making money as you're consulting. And then there's some of them that just want to go ahead and use us because it's just quicker and faster. And the biggest loss isn't the actual loss in the fire or flood or rain or whatever. It's more about the time that you're, the time to rebuild because you're losing customers. If it's a restaurant or something that you've really built to try to get it done. And from the construction, from the insurance side of it, there's the business loss income or the business income lost that, that they're paying for that they want to just get done, get it back up and running as soon as possible.
If the consulting is the driver, how'd you build the consulting business?
By hiring Dave and having the relationships. There's a lot of young people out there trying to do this and the people that are in charge don't want to talk to them. They just want to talk to people they already know that are going to get the stuff done. He's had those prior relationships. And then we also have a guy that does just flat cold calling and has done it for 3 years and established relationships in order for us to do. And, hey, just give us a job, throw us a bone and then we'll do it. We'll do another one. We keep doing a good job and we build it. And we have just good experienced consultants that are out there building the jobs or estimating them, setting the reserves.
Who is it that actually is the decision maker you're targeting? Is it singular or are there many different titles?
The insured. So the person that actually owns the building, or owns the whatever has been damaged, they're the ones that actually make the decision, but they rely and they lean heavily on the consultant in order to make that decision. Like, hey, I've had a great experience with these guys. You should use them because you can get into, I think there's a lot of construction companies that think they know what they're doing. And we do new construction also. That company is completely different. And the reason it's different is that the way you go about doing the money, setting the budgets and doing the project is different in that you have to, the paperwork and the process through the insurance is completely different than just building a new building for a customer that has an architect and they have an owner's rep and you just go about with change orders and whatnot.
That's fascinating. Let me go back and see if I understand though. So there's a major loss, catastrophic loss, whatever you want to call it. Then the first contact is going to be the insurance company, but does the insurance company recommend the consultant or is the consultant going to really engage with the insurance company? How does that work exactly?
Right. So the insurance company will have an adjuster. So whether that's an independent adjuster or whatnot that they have, that adjuster will then, that adjustment firm or that adjuster will call us as a consultant to consult on the job. And I believe some of that is just to spread the liability out, right? So, hey, this is, we trust the consultant. They set the reserve. They set the stuff up. And then we report back to the consultant reports back to the adjuster. Some of the carriers, some of the adjusters don't want us to even mention that we do construction also, but the other ones really like the fact that we're also a general contractor because our estimate has more weight to it. It's not just a piece of paper with a scope that you hope that covers everything.
And if there's no change orders, you'll honor your estimate if they want to give you the job at the estimate that you gave them?
Yep. So, right. So the change orders in the insurance world is called supplements. And so you're always, especially in restoration, you're always come up on things that you maybe didn't see. And they typically have a 10% contingency in there. So, but we try to really push that, they hate supplements, especially if they have to go back to the insurance company because they look bad if you have to. So we try to really guarantee that we say we don't have supplements. We have a our name of the company is Pro Commercial. We have a Pro Commercial protocol where it's backed up with pictures and all of the information they need to really see that it's a real issue because one of the industry standard, I wouldn't say a standard, but what happens typically is that people know that contingency is sitting out there at 10%. So they feel it's theirs, if you will. And so they try to collect it, whether or not it's warranted or not. And we just don't do that. Like if we're going to ask for it, there's a legitimate issue and you're going to have all the information that backs it up.
So let me go back again. So the business took off when you were able to recruit somebody who was already in the business working for somebody else or working for derivatives, and that person obviously had no contractual prohibition from coming to work from you. He or she already had relationships, and you were able to transfer and translate those to you. Is that correct?
That's true.
And then the guy that, or the girl that's doing the cold calling, what kind of hit rate did they do? And what would a first job be, worst case, as far as yield to you compared to what their salary is or their cost?
So they have a very small base salary. It's based on, you know, their majority of their is on commission, right? So, you know, they're trying to, if you want, we're trying to get 250 jobs out of him. We already have another 150. So we really range from about 400 jobs a year. We try to have a 10% conversion. We're averaging about 5% conversion right now. And so our average job is about 750,000 or more from just the construction side. Right. And we're producing about $5,000 to $5,500 per job that we get on our for fee, like just time it takes to consult a job.
So what's the profit margin on each of those?
Yes.
So yeah, so we're usually, they call it 10 and 10. So it's 10 overhead, 10 profit. So 10%, 10% on the construction. And you're usually ranging in your consulting 38% to 52%. So we'll average 45. And it just depends on the size of the job and how complex it is.
What's the correlation of percentage of consulting to back-end jobs you get?
The quality of the job. So initially, our first year was just get jobs in so we could have our consultants pay for themselves. And then we've been more selective of just being able to refine our calling and talking to people about what we do and why we're doing it, what kind of jobs we're looking for. So we're not just looking for another consulting job. It's more, hey, we're looking for larger jobs. We're looking for jobs that possibly can convert. And then if we have companies that aren't really wanting us to convert, we'll put a different consultant on it that really isn't versed in converting. But I think a broken piece in our whole process is, I don't have a great way. Our consultants love to consult. They're like engineers, right? They want to go in, they want to look at it, they want to solve it, and they put it together. But as far as us converting it to a construction job, they're not against it. They're just not pro. I don't think they're super proactive in pushing for it.
How many do you have?
We only have 4 consultants right now.
On a weekly, monthly, whatever correlation, how many engagements do they go out on within that period?
So we have some relationships that just naturally come in, right? So that's kind of that 150 this year. And so we're looking for another 250. So is that about 22 new assignments a month?
So 150 is it like $5 million of consulting a year?
The average 5,000 to 5,500, 400, right? So is that 2 million plus in consulting?
What is it?
Is that right?
Is it 2 million? 20, maybe 2 million.
And you did how much? What were the numbers again?
5,000 per consulting job at 400 a year. So it's about 2 million of pure consulting.
But you're saying that the correlation of jobs that come from it is it exceptional?
Only 10%, you said?
Yeah, we're trying for 10%. We're only getting 5%. So of the 400, so we're maybe getting 20 jobs. So 12 to 14 million of construction was our goal.
But if you
this year,
okay. So, and you're doing like 6 or 7.
Yeah. So this past year we were right just about 6.
And it's a 10% profit margin.
Yeah, profit overhead and profit, which typically our overhead isn't really so. Our gross, we would say our gross profit, if you will, is 20%.
So let me ask you, 1.2 on that side of the business.
Yeah.
So if you only get 5 or 10% of the business that emanates from a consult, who gets the rest, and how hard is it to at least, I mean, is it bid-based? Is it just arbitrarily most of the time appointed? How do the jobs get let?
There is no letting. I mean, you get the job, and the insured picks you, and then you go out to market and get it. So
it's the adjuster that picks you at the end?
No, it would be the insured.
So, okay, gotcha. So that's interesting. And your consultant has to meet the insured, obviously, because he or she is on site figuring it all out, right?
Yep. Yep. And if we get, really just quickly, if we get the mitigation, so if we're able to get in, the earlier we get in, the better. So if we have a partner company that will do the mitigation, they do a great job. And it's a huge deal the way the mitigation is done for, because it sets the stage of how the rest of that job is going to go. So for example, if they have a flood cut that's supposed to be 2 foot and they cut it at 2 foot, 2 inches, you have to now use a drywall. If you're going to put drywall back up on the cut, you're going to have to use double the drywall because they didn't cut it right. If they cut it exactly at 2 feet, you can use one plank of drywall versus two, because it's two, you can split it in half, right? And so there's just a lot of cost savings that are done when it's done right. But also they recommend, and as they do their job well, the tenant or the owner of the property, the landlord, or, you know, whether if they're leasing, they get to see how it's all done effectively and quickly and done right. And then we can get in and get it done even quicker. But they're also saying, hey, we did a good job. This is who you should use for your bill back. They listen because they're like, you did a great job. Okay, we'll just continue the process and go. If we get in late behind somebody that does a terrible mitigation job, it goes worse. And there's sometimes where we won't even take the job because there's too much mess there for us to be able to clean up, or we know what the end result's going to end up being.
And mitigation entails what and what?
So mitigation, you're basically, if it's a water loss, you're a professional evaporator, right? So you basically are getting all the moisture out to make sure there's no mold. If there is mold, you're mitigating the mold. If it's fire, you're tearing stuff out, and then you're also cleaning up stuff so you don't have any residual smell or anything from the fire. And then, you know, and then of course, if there's structure or any damage, you know, we're able to handle that.
So, but is the structural the next?
No, that's not mitigation. Yeah, that's the next step. Sorry.
Okay, got it. That's interesting. So, okay, so there's three steps. One is the consult. Is there always a consult, or is sometimes the adjuster will just, you know, call it him or herself, and then somebody's going to do the two other stages?
Yeah, I would say sometimes the adjuster, you know, they're privy. I mean, they understand it enough that they'll do it. But a lot of times when it's more complicated or larger losses, they'll bring in a consultant because we know, I mean, that's just what we do. And they'll have that, it'll have a trust. Like we had a recent one 2 years ago, not even quite 2 years ago. Consultant thought it was a $280,000 loss. It ended up being $1.6 million. I mean, he thought it was nuts. And we're like, we don't even know what you're, like, he just didn't know. Like and it really was. Like, it wasn't, I don't even think we didn't even make our 20% on that. So it's just kind of, that's how diverse it is of, like, you might get an adjuster that comes in and they're used to residential, and all of a sudden they have a large loss in commercial and they just don't know.
Before I forget, I have a handful of questions here for you. The first one is, when the insurer picks someone else, are you able, or do you ever speak with them to understand kind of what the reasoning was? How much were you off in terms of bid compared to the next best one?
Yeah, it's usually not a bid issue. They look at it from a standpoint of, oh, I have a, but everybody has a buddy that's a construction guy, you know, oh, my brother, you know, he can do this. And oh, the insurance company sends you a check, and, you know, and then you're like, oh, I've got this money. And then they realize, holy crap, that's not even close to enough.
So it's almost like in finance, like brokers, you grease them up and take them to nice restaurants and stuff. Are you guys doing that? Taking them to football games or?
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing like that. So,
could you?
You might be able to. I'm not sure what the regulations are. It seems like everything's regulated right now as far as being able to do that.
My other question is, what's the payment structure for the consultants? Is it a flat fee or an hourly fee?
Hourly fee, net 30 typically.
So is there any incentive on your side to make the consultants more efficient?
Yes.
Or the more efficient they are, the less money you make because it's hourly.
No, I think it's more efficient just that, no. I mean, the more efficient that they're actually, and I think billing, I think there's some efficiencies in, are they billing all the hours? Are they actually, do they forget some of those? Or there's some pushback from the carriers too about travel, stuff like that. So you're always massaging that to make sure that you're not overcharging for this, but maybe you've.
So in general, how many hours does it take for a consultant to kind of come up with the end result on average?
So 20. probably. It would be 20 to 25.
And if we were able to get that down to 5, what would that do for your business?
Well, provided you could continue to charge the 55 or 5,000 and it's down to 5, it'd be great, right? So okay. I'm not
but
sure
then
how.
At that point, though, it wouldn't be ethical if you're charging hourly, right? So at that point, you would switch to fixed.
Right, right. So you kind of wonder. So my idea with that would be is that you put a cap on it. Say it's not, we'll do it for this amount, right? But then every job you get, I mean, if you get into it, it could be a 50 or 60 hour job because of something that turned up in the middle of it. You got a bearing wall that you have to pull out and put a new one in or something. So, you know, that's just one example, but.
Yeah. Wow.
And so if you could cut the hours down from 25 to 5, you would be able to bid on, instead of doing 400, you might be able to do 2000.
Great point. Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So
if you had that, right? Yeah.
So you'd be able to do 5 times the revenue in consulting. Maybe you round it down to 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And then the same thing on the construction, even if you don't fix the conversion problem.
Yeah. So there's, I mean, that's kind of where that technology right now is coming in, where there's a new one. It's an AI called Ask Amy. So it's AEMI. And it takes the Xactimate is what they use to do the estimates. It's kind of like when you take your car in and you know, get in a car wreck. Basically, they tell you what kind of, you know, here's your make, model, da, 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 and tells you, all right, here's what it's going to cost. And the insurance company says, yep, that's what it's going to cost. And they do it. They have the same thing for construction. It's a little bit more, you have to build it a little bit differently in construction, but it's similar. And then Amy will go in, look at it, make sure that you put all the line items and you didn't double up on anything, and then make it more efficient, and then even add stuff if you forgot stuff that maybe assemblies that you weren't required to do. So because it's really about time, like we're back to that whole time thing. Time is not your friend, and accuracy is the other thing. So it takes more time to be accurate, and it takes more time that then we want to allow. So the quicker and more accurate you can make this, the better everybody's happy.
What kind of data are you collecting? Like, would you be able to look back and see what did the consultants kind of come up with in terms of an estimate? What was the final hard cost to you, revenue to you, profit on the project? Would we be able to go and analyze the last 400 projects in the last year and come up with some correlations and analysis that we find there?
I think so. It's easier to do that in new build, right? That's actually your most valuable information is what you can build for. So if you're building a warehouse, what can you build a warehouse for? If you're building a hotel, what's that cost per square foot? So you have that data. When it comes into restoration, it becomes so much, it's so differentiated because it's such, you know, was it wind, driving rain and flood, or was it a fire? And how bad was the fire? Oh, that one actually destroyed, you know, the structural. So it was different. So there's the variables in restoration become difficult. And you also, it's very difficult to analyze it per line item, right? I mean, do we actually pull that door out and put that door back in the amount of time allotted for what we had in there, or didn't we? Cause you get an overall bid to replace all doors and there's 200 of them. Here it is.
But all that data is captured on your side, right? Like
it
when
is.
They're doing the, when they're doing the consult and the audit, they know that, you know, there's a box to tick. This was a fire thing. And it, you know, whatever different variables you're looking at, you have a checklist, so to speak, of things that you're kind of running through. And then is that digitized? Like when, after you go through those checklists, do you have that stored somewhere on your side?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have it. So it's called Procore. Pretty standard management project management software. And it captures all of that. Captures your schedule. You have your Gantt chart. Yep. You have all of your line items, everything, actual versus budget. Yep.
But you have all the data in terms of the features of the restoration, right? Like fire, wind, your example of the door, all of that's in there. So you would have in a database somewhere, you know, for job A, it had these problems, fire, wind, whatever. This is the total cost that we estimated. This was the final cost of what the job ended up being. This was the profit. You would have rows of this for each job that you've done, hundreds of them or thousands of them.
Yeah, probably not thousands because we haven't done thousands, but I mean, we would have 100, right? I mean, we're kind of new in this, but yeah.
Are you doing anything right now with that data?
Well, the hard part about it is, so if we're doing, if we go back to the pro commercial, the new build side, not the insurance side, You can do a lot with that because now you can really get competitive and maybe have some internal advantages over your competitors because you know you're very efficient at whatever, you know, if it's maybe you have a very efficient MEP, right, which is mechanic, electrical, plumbing contractor that nobody else has that available to them. We do. But when it gets into restoration, you're running into budgetary stuff where you may have an adjuster that's, you know, very anti a certain light item, but he's very lenient on others. So putting costs in and out, and it doesn't, and you're not bidding against anybody, right? You're really just trying to make the adjuster happy and understand where we're coming from. And so that, in my mind, that is where that Ask Amy kind of that AI thing really helps because it really standardizes the estimate. So it's hard for them to argue what's right and what's not right, or that it doesn't need that, or it does.
I have three more questions and I'll pass it back to Jay. Is it a finite amount of adjusters that you're dealing with, or every job, it's a different adjuster and it's a new person to build a relationship with?
It's a different adjuster. And I think that one of the things that would be a real benefit is you can write in your adjusters. So if you're like a Brookdale, right? They're a huge senior care management company. They may have adjusters that are written into their policies so that they know that they're good adjusters that understand their product and what they have. And so if we can work with that, kind of like when we build hotels, if we build a hotel for Choice or for IHG, we have certain project managers that come in to check our work and for the brand that they love us because they know what they're getting and how we build.
And these adjusters, it's nationwide, right? So
it is. Yep.
And are you only serving a particular area or are you nationwide too?
No, we're lower 48. I mean, depending on what it is, but if we don't have a license in that state, we have reciprocity with other states that we can get in and get it done quickly. So
almost seems like it'd be a cool tool to have like a glass door for adjusters where you and all the other restoration companies have one place to kind of put notes on the adjusters. So that way, if it's in a state that you're not placing bids on, it's no harm to you for someone else to have a little bit of inside information of what you wrote about that person.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
What's the incidence of these kind of problems happening? I mean, you're estimating 400 this year out of what, 4,000, 500,000? I mean, how many actually, is there any kind of a quantitative estimate?
Yeah, I'm sure, you know what? That's a great question, Jay. What is the industry? I mean, it's over a trillion, right? So we just got, you know, Iowa just got pounded with tornadoes. So we were out looking at a job, tornado jobs, right? Just things that just commercial buildings that are completely destroyed and we're writing what it's going to cost to rebuild them. I'm sitting up at my lake house now and there was a flood here and there's, you know, 500 homes and a bunch of businesses destroyed in Spencer, Iowa. I mean, it's just Iowa. What's that?
And do you send people there?
Yeah. So, well, actually the adjusters will call us. So we'll have Condra and say, hey, we need you to get down there and we'll do it. So, or if it's mitigation, yeah, and there's another thing called clerking where we'll go down and sit a job of another mitigation company that's doing it to make sure that because the standard is what they'll do is not standard, but they'll try to add, they only need one dehumidifier in a room and they've got five in there and they'll charge for the five versus just the one. Does that make sense? So you're clerking it to make sure that they're holding to what they should be doing the whole time.
So Matt, I'm sorry, go ahead, Nick.
It seems like you were saying 20 hours before, but if you have to physically take a plane, go to a site, do all that stuff, is that the bulk of the 20 hours? Is that one day?
Could be, yeah. I mean, they basically would go there, write up the estimate. And like I said, it depends on the job. I mean, there's plenty of them that might be 20,000. I mean, it just depends the size of it. Like we had a whole church that burned. That obviously, I mean, it was a 12-month, 14-month build. I mean, in addition to the consulting, getting everything ready to go, all of your materials ordered and whatnot. So it just depends on the size.
With AI nowadays, like, shouldn't someone just be able to go and take a videotape of, you know, every room, like the whole building, and then it just automatically analyzes it and tells you what the cost is?
It'll come to that. So really what they're doing is something you've heard of Matterport. If you've used realtor.com or whatever, and you go through a house you can hit this little dot and it goes to that room, hit another dot video wise. And you know, you can go through the whole house and see the whole house without ever having to go to the house. So that same Matterport we'll use for our losses, and it will actually measure out to like the 18th of an inch. And so we'll have all the pictures, we'll have all the stuff, but it'll analyze the video and do assemblies of what needs to get done, but we're not there yet that I know of. I mean, it could have changed last week, right? As you know,
one thing that we're starting to do is work with qualified clients, find a process. In your case, maybe it's this consulting process and coming up with a bid and analyzing kind of the structure and coming up with the bid and making that process more efficient, and then taking a percentage of the efficiency gain. But I wonder if you could go to the adjusters and on the ones that you're either not bidding on or maybe even bidding on, but maybe especially the ones you're not bidding on, you could tell an adjuster you'll say yes or no at 10% less than whatever the best bid is outside of you. And then you kind of just have a free option to say yes or no. I don't know if that's a model that's ever worked before.
It might. I mean,
it's just a free option to them, right? I mean, it's like they're not going to get any worse than what's currently their best. And they go to Matt and they might get 10% better. And then we optimize the process of, you know, calculating what the cost would be really quickly. And, you know, if you can do it, you know, 30%, you know, something close to the 20% lower than the 10%, you know, so you still make your same margin, it's worthwhile now.
I had an idea as far as the Matterport, right? So if Matterport could really go through, do a 360 of each room, and you get a full scope of everything, right? So you can see it. And then you could actually, there's so many realtors were using all this, these people doing Matterports for their open houses. Well, there's not a lot of that happening because of just where the market is. So now instead of us having to travel and expense out a full trip and everything, we could just have them go out, charge them, they'd charge us X amount like they were doing a house. They would have jobs, we would get it, and then we'd be able to maybe, you know, we would be able to save, because that's a big deal for insurance right now is just the cost prior to getting the reserve, right? I mean, if they could save that on however many claims there are a year, it would save a tremendous amount. And a lot of them are getting very reluctant on paying travel, so they're trying to find consultants local instead of sending us out, even though we might be a better consulting firm as far as getting to the real reserve. They're getting hit on a lot with just how much it costs to get the reserve put together. And then at the same time, if you could come back and say, hey, we'll not only do it, but we'll take whatever your best bid is, we'll take 10% off of it. But they're not really looking at the bid. They're just looking at what the estimate is. And so the dangerous part about that is that, you know, our competitors could just go and say, all right, we're just going to have some crap estimates. We know Pro Commercial is going to come in and do it. And we're like, oh my gosh, wait a minute. So we'd have to validate that estimate to make sure that it's a real reserve amount.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where technology could help make that more efficient, so the cost is minimal. And you'd probably also want to have some conditions where the estimate has to be above a certain dollar amount, so that if you win, you know, you're making a decent amount of
That's a great idea. It really is about how do you get the ear of the adjuster so you're not just another guy out there, you know, looking for another job.
In a market, let's take Florida, how many, I guess you'd call it, commercial adjusters are there? Don't answer yet. Is there a database of them? Do you have, are they licensed in a way where they have to do continuing education?
Yeah, there's associations in about every county in Florida. And then they also have some very strict laws about stuff. But yeah, no, you, and then they all, it's all relationship based. I mean, not all, but a lot of it is.
Are you ever speaking at those conferences?
So in the Midwest, yes, we do speak at them. Yep. Dave will go in and speak, or we'll set it up stuff and go down for sure.
It would seem, Matt, that if the first line of offense is to have the ear and the trust of the adjuster, and you have knowledge and you have understanding of things, people, of how to mitigate, not mitigate in terms of mitigation, on the site, but how to mitigate overcharge or any of a number of things that would be valuable for the adjuster to make them a hero. It would seem like to the extent you could constantly make that available, if you're allowed, you go into a city and you have either, if you don't have the physical budgetary allocation to, invite them all to an event, a dinner, a lunch, where you actually educate them, you create something. It can be a document, a book, or a webinar. But if you're constantly in their mind share and you're doing it with knowledge and insight that makes them stronger, it's very interesting. I years and years ago, I did work with a guy who was a co-founder of FedEx. He sold his interest when they got so big and he got into another business that we helped him with. But we're talking one night and drinking, and he was telling me that when they started, they realized that their whole job was not to sell to the executive. It was to make the assistant a star. That when that executive said, figure out how to get this damn thing to them tomorrow, their job was to make that, and in the most cases, woman, a superstar in the eyes of her boss. That was their whole purpose. And they just worked like mad to win the trust of the assistants. But if the key is that and that's one thing. The other thing, I mean, I would basically have I'd be merciless in my qualitative continuation of finding every vantage point to demonstrate to them that you are helping them be more of a hero to their own boss and make better whatever and avoid this and know how to deal with this and give them all kinds of insight and lessons and things that they might know, they might not know, mechanisms to keep people honest, all kinds of things that only demonstrate you're operating at a strata of understanding that your competitors aren't, number one. Number two, depending on your availability of the people to do the work, if you've got a precedent that says you find somebody who's done it for somebody else, you hire him or her, you give them, a base and upside, it would seem like that model would be pretty easy, depending on your cash flow, to replicate either as a partner or as an office anywhere you wanted. But it would seem like if the adjusters are, by the way, one more thing, even if you're not asked to bid, it would seem like if you are not dealing with the same adjuster all the time anyhow, and they don't want you to bid it, you could still, what would happen if you send a bid anyhow and say, look, just in case you aren't happy or somebody else doesn't match it, we have a concern. Are you going to be blackballed? You may be, but I would try to do a lot of proactive things that focused on the gaps that you've uncovered.
I appreciate that. Those are good suggestions.
Jay took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, make a mastermind group or whatever you want to call it, but how do you become the thought leader? Then you start getting all these adjusters virtually or in person all there and show them how smart you are and you're top of mind.
And how smart you're going to help them, how much smarter and more adroit you're going to help them become.
Yeah.
And because you've got their back, especially like new adjusters. And what do new adjusters want? They want to look great. And so for you to look great.
When you make a bid, do you have to bid for the entire project or can you chop it up and you just bid for a portion of the project?
The whole project.
And why is that? Why couldn't it be that you handle one half of the building or one part of it and then someone else does another part? Obviously, it's easier logistically to work with one company, but I'm asking for the reason, obviously, this is complex and a fire could mess up a lot of different types of things, but I'm wondering if there's pieces of the restoration that could be kind of productized at a bit of a fixed cost where you almost don't even need to care about wind, fire, whatever. It's like to fix this aspect of a project in general, it's going to cost 50 grand. And it's almost like an auto bid for that fraction of the project.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So what we've done, we call it the time compactor. Right? Because it's all about time. And so we look at it and say, a lot of times what gets caught up is the estimate, right? So now let's enter in public adjusters, right? So that people are in there they feel like the insurance company doesn't really want to pay the whole amount of what it's going to take to get it back to the way it was, right? And so a public adjuster enters the picture. So now you've got this whole thing, and it can go to appraisal, which just means it goes to, they get two appraisals, and it takes a lot of time and all this stuff, right? But a lot of times those arguments or the variables are not the things that you're talking about. Let's say drywall, insulation, electrical, plumbing, mechanical, just shit that has to happen. And there's really not a big variance in cost, right? I mean,
that's what I'm talking about. So could you just bid on those things?
Right. So we just go in and just do those, and then let maybe somebody else, they can argue out while we're doing those things, they can argue out the other stuff. But
is there a reason why that's not done now?
Because I think it's confusing to the insured that once they sign a contract, because it is for the whole thing, then they're giving in to the insurance company. But you have some insurance companies, right? I haven't worked with any of them, but there are insurance companies that, I mean, by nature, right? The insurance company want to pay the least amount that they have to in order to bring it back to the level of what it was. And the insured wants as much money as they can get to, in order to get bet more, or at least at the very least what they had prior. But ultimately what they forget is, you know, the five worst mistakes you can make is one of them is just get all these boots on the ground, and all of a sudden your mitigation, which is where the majority of the margin is made in these, you end up using up a lot of the money because you just want it dry and clean, but now you don't have any money left to restore it, if that makes sense.
I mean, if that can work, it definitely makes it a lot more straightforward and scalable, because you basically created a product. But Matt, the way we like to always end these is, what were your biggest takeaways and what are you going to do next?
Yeah, I think that just looking at the process, see if we can't standardize some of it, if we have to bid on the whole thing, or just maybe say, hey, we do it up to here and let the more complicated, you know, the trim, or maybe it's all the finish work is done separately. So maybe that's a way. And then I think I really like about how do we all, you know, all the different aspects of what we, of who we're targeting and what we can do to attract them in a different way. So, and as far as, I think it's just more explore that and dig into more who our client is and what we need to do to attract them up front.
Awesome. So, well, thanks for being on the Optimize podcast, Matt, and looking forward to staying in touch and seeing how you do.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you to everyone at home or on the go for listening. If you find this show helpful, please hit the follow or subscribe button. It does wonders for the show, so more people can find the Optimize podcast organically. If you'd like to be on the show, we have an open invite to anyone who wants their challenges solved. If you want to get in the hot seat, you can submit your business right now at theoptimizepodcast.com. If we think you're a good fit, we'll get you on the show. If you have any questions or recommendation, drop us a comment right here, wherever you're listening to your podcast. We'd love to hear from you. See you on the next episode.